When thinking about the subject matter of death and spiritual life, we often find conflicting thoughts in us. The most common thought of the Western person, and I find also devotees very much involved in this, is that they don't like to think about death, especially not their own death. Because it's just something so fearful, something so beyond our ordinary categories of thought, that we conveniently hide the subject matter. Better not think about it. But very often, death comes back into our memory. When a near and dear one dies, a father or grandfather, most probably, you're still young, or even when a devotee dies, and there it is again. The most sure thing in our life is death. Everything else, we don't really know about, but death is sure. I want to read to you three philosophers on death. The first is Jean-Paul Sartre, who said, "Death is not a possibility of my life. It is the direct opposite. It is the extinction of all my possibilities." He thinks death is the end of his being, and therefore the end of all his possibilities, and he is very much afraid of it. A total different philosopher, Gandhi, said, and here you need to concentrate a little because it's subtle, "Life and death are like two boxes. Each one of them has the key to unlock the mystery of the other box. In death lies the key to understand life, and in life lies the key to understand death." The last statement I want to read to you about this subject comes from Srila Prabhupada. I have included him in the list of philosophers, but for most of us, he's more than a philosopher. He said, "Philosophy means to keep death in front of your eyes. In my own approach to this subject matter, I could see that death is not only a philosopher who helps me see the reality of life, but he is even a guru in his own right." I still remember very graphically how my own spiritual search in this life was inspired by death. At that time, I was with a group of young people, and we wanted to make a recording of some piece of music, and waited for our guitar player. But instead of him, we received a phone call from his girlfriend, who told me, I was picking up the phone, "Cry, cry, 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 cry. Why are you crying? Cry, cry, cry. Martin had just a terrible accident, and the hospital says he may not live. Martin died the same night in agony, and after some time we were called for his funeral. As the coffin was lowered to the grave, I was very, very sad. Then I was requested to put, like you do in Germany, and I suppose also in Denmark, put a shovel of earth on the coffin, in Zark, and I was more shocked. And at that time, there was a voice inside of me. It was an ancient voice, a voice I had forgotten since long. The voice said, "Is this all that life has to offer? Being put into a coffin and then underneath the earth, this the dream of the human race, that it has to end in dirt and desperation." And I became very much determined at that time to find out if there is an existence, a more meaningful existence even, beyond death. And a little later, I read the Tibetan book of the death, where there was some information about life after death, and just a little later, the Bhagavad Gita came into my hands, which in fact, as I understood, is starting with lessons on life and death. And what could be a better stage for this subject matter than a battlefield where death is so close? I was reading Srila Prabhupada's translation. "Never was there a time when you nor all these kings ever were. They are now here in the present, and in the future none of them will cease to be." Another verse: "For the soul there is neither birth nor death, and nor does it, since it came into existence, ever stop to be. No weapon can kill the immortal soul," and so on and so forth. You know this. Death in the scriptures, Vedic scriptures, is something which is accepted as natural, something which doesn't need to be put underneath the cloth, and something which is not even in existence when it comes to the eternal soul, the real self. "I will never die." This was the conclusion which I received from the Bhagavad Gita, and I was happy about it. At the same time, the scriptures advise us to use the time which we have before death in a very meaningful way. The 11th canto, Krishna, in the 11th canto in the second Gita, there are few Gitas in our scriptures. One is the Bhagavad Gita, then there's the Uddhava Gita. And in the Uddhava Gita, Krishna says, "All of us are like criminals which have a judgment over their head, the judgment of death. They have to die." Now, in this time which we still have, we can, so to say, utter our last desires. You might have known from your, you know, that criminals in the old time, I do not know the modern system, because in several European states there is no death penalty any longer. But in the old times, when someone was given the judgment, yes, you will die within 1 week by a shot in the head, now you can ask your last desire. So they were asking, or maybe one time I can smoke my favorite mark of cigarette, or I can eat my favorite preparation, or maybe one time you can allow me and drive me around in a Rolls Royce. And then they would be allowed this, and then they would be put before the, you know, then the bullet would come. So this is how the scriptures compare us. Our so-called pleasures, our adventures in this life, are illusory pleasures, because before the background of death, they are really only sarcastic jokes. Nothing more, nothing less, not very meaningful. The whole human experience, in other words, in the material world, especially the gallery of human pleasures, are reduced to the illusory enjoyment of a criminal who's granted his last desire for some sense gratification, which is ultimately meaningless when it is put before the background of his sure death. Other statements that Srila Prabhupada said is that the human being is like a goat on his way to the slaughterhouse, who sees a few fresh and juicy grasses on the way, left and right, and who chews on them and thinks, I'm enjoying life. You can hear already the cruel chopping. Before him, but he nevertheless enjoys the grass, thinks this is life. I know for a materialist this is a very, very, very black information, very unwanted information. For a spiritualist, it is motivating. Let me use my time right. This time, when we think about this, we are reminded that this world is not the real world. It is the shadow world, the shadowy image of reality, which lacks the depth of the spiritual experience. Just like a tree which may be reflected on water, the material world is unreal. Imagine you have a tree reflected in the water, and there are the apples. You dive into the lake, swim to get the apples. As you're trying to enjoy them, you just bite into the water. In the same way, when you want to enjoy pleasures in this world, this shadowy world, this reflection of the real world, you go into it. You do not really enjoy the real substance, which is Sat, Chit, and Ananda, eternality, knowledge, and bliss. So, in this human life, we should not go for the grass on the side or the right in the Rolls Royce before we are brought to our death. But we should make best use of the time which we have by going with full determination on the path of Krishna consciousness. In the Upanishad, death comes as another teacher to Naichiketya. Naichiketya was born in the family of Brahmanas, but he was retarded. Do we all know the word for retarded? Retarded. And his father tried to teach him, but he was just not able to capture even small instructions like which hand to use for eating and which hand to use for what comes after eating. He was so retarded that his father decided to do away with him. One fine morning, he took his son, said to the mother, I'm going with Naichiketya in the forest. When he came to the forest, he said, Naichiketya, sleep. And they both went to sleep. And when the boy was sleeping, father with tears in his eyes took the boy, brought him to where a well was, threw him into the well. And then to make sure he was really away, that nothing could be found of him, his dead body, he rolled a stone over the well. And with tears in his eyes, he didn't feel very well doing this. He went back to the mother and said, oh, this fool, Naichiketya, we both lay down to sleep, and then when I woke up, he was no longer there. I think he went into the forest and some wild animals. Oh, she said, my Naichiketya. Every year, this mother came into the forest at the day of Naichiketya's death and called into the forest, my son, my foolish little son, and cried and broke down, sobbing. Now after a time of, I believe, 10 years, 11 years, she again went into the forest. Naichiketya, it was the day of the death of Naichiketya. Then all of a sudden she heard the voice. Yes, mother, I'm here. Oops. She looked around. Then she heard from where the voice was coming. It was coming from underneath the earth. Mother, mother, come. Was a stone. She rolled the stone away. She looked inside and saw a beautiful boy. As the sunlight was streaming down, she saw a boy with an effulgence. The boy had long, long, long hair, long nails, and he sat on a stone surrounded by knee-deep water, crystal clear water. Mother, please get me out of this well. Is it you, Naichiketya? Yes, mother, it is me. So she took some, yesterday we had the word liyan. Is it liyan? And made something like a rope, and he came out. She said, but you were dead. No, mother, I was not dead. Let me explain. he told how he was brought by his father into the forest, how his father, who was ashamed of a retarded son, threw him into the well, but how the well was full of crystal clear water, but not too deep. He had no injury when falling, and when the thing was closed, the well was closed, he was drinking the crystal clear water, and he said, "Mother, look here." He pointed to some things which looked like squash or cucumbers, which were growing on the side of the well. "I was eating this. In this way, I'm very happy, and well, very healthy," and so on. "Oh," said the mother, but your father is a murderer." "No, no, mother, no, 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 don't judge him. It had to come this way. Because, mother, I was a big rascal. When I was sitting in the well, I have seen my past life and my many deaths. And I have seen that I have wasted my life, and I would have wasted this life also. But because Father threw me down, attempting to kill me, death came as my guru and taught me many things. Listen, mother." Then he told his mother the most amazing story, which I can only tell you in an abridged version, but it's very, very, very instructive. "Mother, I remember how I was a Brahmin once, and I was going with the... I was misusing my birth, and I became a woman hunter. One day, I was enticing a woman who was married, another Brahmin woman, and the husband became so enraged that he actually took a knife and killed me. In my next life, I was born as a tiger. One day, as I was walking on the side of the forest, the king's men came, captured me, and brought me into the zoo where I grew up. It so happened that the king's men went on a hunt, and the princess, feeling bored, went to the zoo, and she saw me in my beauty, full masculine beauty, and I was attracted to her raised breasts, and I was making sounds of great attraction. She also felt very attracted for an interspecies adventure, and opened the door, and I was coming towards her, and I felt my private part swelling in agitation. At that time, the guards of the zoo came, and they threw a spear towards me, which killed me. Then I was born as a donkey." He describes how as a donkey he also felt so attached to the opposite sex, and he was killed before he could enjoy, describes this. "Many lifetimes where all with the same pattern repeats itself. Strong attachment to material life, and you know, being dying and being born again." And then Nachiketa said, "My dear mother, now I know I'm an eternal soul who has been bound by the noose of death around my neck. I have been forced to die again and again and again and again, like a prisoner who's put again and again to his death sentence. And I'm so happy that now I know that beyond the road of the senses, beyond the dark door of death, there is the eternal life of the soul, who is neither born nor is dead. Mother, do you know what? Mother, like, what? And next to me, there is God in the heart. Krishna is just waiting for us to turn away from the road of birth and death and to focus our attention to him. There are many stories like this. Parikshit Maharaj's story takes place before the background of death. He goes through the gate to immortality. And it's interesting for us devotees what the last instructions by Shukadev Goswami are before Parikshit Maharaj leaves the body. And I will conclude my little presentation with this last instructions, because I feel they are extremely relevant for someone who wants to prepare for death and not die like Nachiketya did in his, you know, in what he had seen in a mystical vision. Before the very Shukadev Goswami ends his instructions, he asks Parikshit Maharaj, "Is everything clear?" You know, it's like there are only a few more minutes are left. Parikshit Maharaj has heard about the pastimes of the Lord, but death is anyways a heavy thing, you know. And Shukadev Goswami says, "See, Parikshit Maharaj, you have to give up animalistic attachments to your false ego." Hare Krishna. I want to repeat it, one devotee. This was leaving us for one moment. She went through the gate of sleep, not death. You have to give up your attachment to this body. Only by the false ego you are convinced that you are the body and you die. This is false. This is wrong. He preaches like this. And my dear devotees, if we want to reach deathlessness, the kingdom of Krishna, we will also have to learn the same thing, to give up our deadly attachments to this material world. And how? By shifting them to the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. It is the only possibility. Otherwise, we will keep on, you know, hiding the obvious, we will not think about it, or we will become totally afraid when we see it before our eyes. We become, and so on and so forth. Because death is the ultimate departure. Let me tell you what happens at death so that you know what it is. And this will become a little heavy for 2 minutes, but then we are through it. You know, the material body is composed of five material elements, which have a lot to do with sensual perception. The element earth manifests in flesh and bones and in the sense of smell. This is attributed to the element earth. The perception of smell is earthly. Now, at the time of death, this element becomes attacked by kala. Kala means that what drives. Time is the driver. Like a child which may have a whip and drive a cone. Time is attacking at the time of death, the element earth, and this means that you feel all of a sudden some heaviness. It's like very heavy, your body feels extremely heavy. Color in your skin disappears and this goes inside. When the element water is attacked, then your taste leaves you. When earth is attacked, your sense of smell leaves you. You can't smell anything and anyone any longer. When the water is attacked, which is manifesting in blood and in all the liquids in the body, your sense of taste is going. They put something in your mouth and you just don't taste it any longer. The sense has left you. Your feeling is that you feel as if you are drowning and your water in the body is no longer under your control. You cry, the saliva comes, liquids come from the two gates underneath the belt, and so on. At that time, the smell of death is spreading in your room. When the element fire next gets attacked, you can't see forms any longer. When friends come and cry before you, they don't recognize you. Who are you? Can't see. Inside of you, you have the feeling that you're burning inside, but at the same time, all of a sudden, you feel very cold, as if the heat becomes contracted in the area of the heart and the extremities, like the arms and the legs, have no heat any longer. Finally, when air becomes attacked, you can't touch anything. People catch your hand. You don't feel them any longer. And your breath becomes very difficult. Usually mucus comes up and they have to put you in the sitting position so that the mucus goes back into the lungs and does not accumulate here in the throat so that the breathing becomes heavy. The last thing which goes, or let me say, the last element which is attacked is ether. That means that you can't hear anything any longer, and then death comes very fast. A dying person, all his senses have left him already, taste, seeing, smell, and so on. And he may even be in a coma, but he can still hear. That's why when someone is in a comatose position, you must be very careful what you say. Avoid things like, oh, he has gone, or so, because he will, I'm here, but he cannot use his sense of speech any longer. So the last thing which goes is your sense of hearing goes. Then you go through one of the nadis, the energy channels, and you leave the body for good. Yes. So death means the ultimate goodbye or departure. Now, if you want to learn how to be prepared for that moment, you have to give up attachments now, voluntarily. The more you develop attachments, the more it will be difficult for you to say goodbye and to go. Human life, the materialistic life, which doesn't know about death and dying, This is cultivating attachments. It's very difficult for people to leave. It's so painful to say goodbye, to be forced to say goodbye. I want to end this presentation by telling you a story about the beings from the river. Once there was a river, and in it were many beings whose life was consisting of attachments. What this means is they were holding fast to the little pieces of wood which went inside the river. They were holding fast to the stones in the river until one day one being said, "I can't any longer exist like this, holding fast, holding fast, holding fast. I'm dying of boredom. I will let go." The other being said, "If you let go, you will die very soon. The river will carry you and smash you against the rock." "No," said the being, "I have to let go." He let go, and the river came and carried him, and it almost smashed him against the rock, but then it went yoop and carried him onward. He was floating and passing another colony of beings whose life was, they were just holding fast to something. Fast, fast, fast. And they saw the other being who was free passing by, and they said, "Oh, our Messias has come to liberate us all. Look at him. He is a free man." But the being said, "Nonsense. I am as much the Messias as every one of you. And just let go. Don't hold fast." But they said, no, we have to. Our life is consisting out of holding fast." Since that time, they tell about legions, about the Messias who passed them one day, so on. Most of us human beings are the same. We are not surrendering to the Lord and His plan, but we are very, very tightly holding fast to our own little meaningless ideas, and in this way wasting our life. And Krishna consciousness gives us the unique opportunity to learn from scriptures the way of freedom by following the path of Sharanagati, surrender to the plan of the Lord, which is like a big river carrying us. Each one of us should find out his or her part or place, better place is better. Each one of us should find out his or her place in the Brahman plan, the spiritual plan of the Lord, and in this way make the life successful. So, Hare Krishna. I said what I wanted to say this evening. Hope you will keep it in your mind. How to find out one's place in Krishna consciousness, I would like very much to explain tomorrow morning. It's another very, hope it will be an interesting presentation. The subject matter of tomorrow's class will be how to become authentic in Krishna. How to become authentic, that's all. Obviously, we will hear about Krishna consciousness, but it's a method how to find one's place in the plan of the Lord, which will hopefully carry us like the river carried the living entity who became free. So I hope that this was not too general. I had to really control my tongue when giving this presentation because I wanted to very much talk about death and what it could mean for a devotee. My point was that all major spiritual instructions are taking place in the front of death. I wanted to bring death into your consciousness as your own instructor in spiritual life. And I wanted to explain what is most properly the most important thing to learn from death. That is voluntarily detachment. Let go, so to say, of the unessential things. More than let go, let us go into the plan of the Lord, the river plan of the Lord, who can carry us away so that our lives can become meaningful and not just little piles of misery who are very much engaged in holding fast to our private illusions. That was a summary of the intention even of this presentation. Hope you have learned something. Do you have some questions about this or this subject? Yes, Pujariji. What is your name? Haladara. Yes.
I want to know about you are mentioning that different elements
are dissolved, yes.
That means that the universe has a because the universe has a part of this knowing and plan that we are going to die with this.
Mm-hmm. Well, the arrangement is done under kala, under time, and these different elements are dissolved one after the other due to the natural laws governing death. That time, yes, the demigods, they retire one after the other who are the demigods who are helping us in these sense perceptions. Yes? That's intense. Yeah, it's different levels. The yogi is doing this. He's entering the different elements. He's leaving earth, goes through water, fire, goes back from the grass to the subtle. Yes, as far as I'm aware of this, it's also in the first canto, is how someone gives up the body consciously. Krishna deals with this subject in the 8th chapter of the Gita, where he describes different times which are favorable of giving up the body, favorable for moksha, for liberation from this world. Then he looks at Arjuna, who most probably must be moved by the subject matter. Then he looks at Arjuna, who thinks of, how can I control the times when I give up my body? And he says, don't worry. For devotee, the Lord, it's not important which time he leaves the body. Because in the case of a devotee, he doesn't tell this, but the Lord comes personally, takes him out of the body. See, how this happens is like this. When you die, all your senses become extinguished. That means you don't see anything any longer. Finally, you don't hear anything any longer. That's absolutely traumatic. Imagine all of a sudden this light would go out. Then the light outside the room, the hall would go out, but in an unnatural way, everything would become dark. You, all of a sudden, you wouldn't hear any, you wouldn't smell anything. Most probably, you wouldn't register that. You would walk, but you wouldn't touch anyone or anything any longer. Your seeing has long left you, and you wouldn't. First, you hear Lalita Nath scream, "Oot, oot, oot! Go to the oot!" You don't even hear Lalita not screaming any longer. It's all closed. Now, all of a sudden, this is the experience of the near-death experience, somewhere, some light comes. What would you do in the panic? You would move towards that. So this is what happens at the time of death. Everything becomes closed, all the perception. But in one of the nadis, do you know what is a nadi? They all come from the heart area. They go to the different. One nadi becomes illumined by the super soul. Now, for a normal person, he only sees light. For a good Christian, he may say Jesus, or Buddhist may say Buddha. The super soul presents him his worshipable deity, and then they come towards him, and then he guides them to their next destination. For a devotee who is a good devotee, Krishna comes, because he's the original super soul. And he guides you from this body to your next destination. And you go, and then two parents become attracted to each other. And according to that, then you're pulled into the next body via the seat of your father, and you're there in the womb. After 9 months, you wake up and you begin to pray, "Oh Lord, bring me out." The next thing you say is, "Oh Lord, don't bring me out." Because I was falling in Maya last life. I remember. I rather prefer to be here in a state of fully enlightened consciousness and go out. And then, "Oh Lord, please help me. The next life, I'm going to surrender to you. Hari Bol." Then you come out and you, well, you know better than me what you did. Tibetan Book of the Death is an instruction to those who help someone go from one body to the next. So, you know, the instructor says to the soul, now watch this, watch that, or so, because he's still hearing. This is the last thing which goes. Now, do we believe in that? I personally feel that according to the system in which you are trained and so on, you do see the attachments in different pictures. Like if you are Buddhist, you see in Buddhistic pictures. When you are in our tradition, you also see things according to the pictures which you have. Like I was once operated, and I had this near-death experience. Obviously, I didn't die, but I left the body during the operation and was floating above the body and was a witness of the operation. It was the most intense experience in my life. I mean, it was so intense. You know, I can't describe it. It just felt very, very, very powerful, and because I was not really prepared, to be very honest with you, it was terrifying. Is not the word. It was, I felt so helpless in the situation, being pushed by these forces which were totally beyond my control. And at that time, I saw different things. I saw, for instance, my whole life going by, and all my the scenes from my life and the scenes of my attachment, as I was trying to, you know, take some shelter. Then only at the towards the end, I mean, after a long time in that time frame, I remembered to call out for Krishna. That whatever happens now, just be close by and just don't leave me. Then I saw the Lord. It was like a picture from one of our illustrations. And he smiled at me with a smile, saying that you're a fool. It was a fool in a loving way. Why are you worried? I'm always with you. Have you forgotten? You know, like a father who smiles about a child when he has forgotten something, which is very, very obvious. You have forgotten? I'm always with you. In other words, yes, you will see things according to, you know, you will see the same things, attachments, but according to the your spiritual training and understanding, you will see it in the certain pictures, in your certain language. We are, you know, when you make a cross-cultural examination, what happens at death, you can see the same patterns which are described in the Vedic scriptures expressed in different languages and with different pictures. There are, I mean, death is death, but the way you understand it is the picture. It's like now, when I say, the best preparation you have ever tasted, please think about it. And one will think about strawberries with cream, another will think about bread. Krishna Prema and his wife will most probably think about pasta or pizza. You will think the ladus of this temple are clearly amongst the best preparations in the universe. So everyone has a certain picture. But it's principally the same, something which tastes good. See, in the subtle world, and you're entering that now, there's a variety, there are also internal sensual things, like in your dream, you do something like tasting, you do something like seeing, but it's different, subtle. All the gross senses, according to Baladev Vidyabhushana, have their counterpart in subtle senses. So you leave your gross body, the gross things are switched off one after the other, but then the subtle things come and you see things. That time you must be Krishna conscious, Lalitanath. It is very, very important. Otherwise, it is so dramatic that if you have not taken the full advantage of this of the time before this death, then who can be very, very happy. I can attest to this. I do not know what mine was not a real death, but it was something near death, or let me say, I wouldn't say near death, it was out of body, I'm sorry, this was the wrong term, out of body. When I think about this, I immediately become serious in Krishna consciousness. So I really want to encourage all of you, use your time well and do not allow this attachment keeping your attention.
Why we forget?
Why we forget this? We are attached to enjoying this world very much, and then we don't want to see it, and the mind is a big trickster. We forget this. We just blank it out. The mind often does these things and just does a blank in some direction. Childhood, you have forgotten many things. Death is also always blanked out. It's also a help offered by the illusory energy so that you can enjoy, think you can enjoy. Now, please don't become now totally afraid as a result of this presentation. It's good to become serious, but it's not that we should go, I'm going to die. No, just think about preparing for it. I like very much one statement from the Buddha. Buddha has said there are four very deep experiences in life. The first is the experience of dying. That's a, you know, deep means it's really something. Second is death. The third is reincarnation or rebirth. And the fourth deep impression of life is living. mark the succession, dying, death, and rebirth, and then, in the end, living. Living. Why is it on the fourth place only? In the West, we do it like this. Living is the most important. Dying, you know, think about death. No. And rebirth, that is too far out. You know, Buddha puts it the other way around. The reason is, if you understand that you will die, that you will experience death, and that you will experience rebirth, you will do anything you can to prepare properly. Your life will take a different color, a different intention, a different place, and so on. That's why Gandhi said this. A little complicated, I have to read it. Life and death are like two boxes. Each one has a key to unlock the mystery of the other. So, if you understand this dying, death, and rebirth, you will know how to use your life. Again, you know the life, who it's meant for preparation, then you are not afraid of the other three, dying, death, and rebirth. It's an interesting perspective, isn't it? So in Krishna consciousness, we should sometimes think about it, to come back to your question, think about it, and prepare. Become good devotees. Chant your rounds properly. Avoid false pride. And most important, take care that your taste remains alive. Your taste and your faith. Without faith and taste being alive, our spiritual life is not lacking the important dimension. Comes the hunter. What are the time spans between the first element being attacked and dissolved and the last one? No. Because it is individual. Sometimes it takes a long, long time. Sometimes it goes very fast. And sometimes it doesn't even happen like this, because in a violent accident, for instance, you're thrown out of the body. It is totally dependent on the karmic situation. Form of Krishna. I have often thought about it. I've even thought, is it really Krishna, or was it the picture from an ISKCON artist? You know, we should be very analytical in spiritual life. And I have decided to put this question at rest. Whatever it was, Krishna's form came there, and that was his mercy. It had nothing to do with me. He just prayed, and he came. Draupadi is praying one shloka. Oh, like a cloud for a person who is dying from thirst. Like a pot of Amrita to a person who is incurably sick, like a big amount of wealth to a person who is very poor. You have now come, my Lord, to save us. In the time of death, the devotee sees the Lord in the form he worships. That is usually. Yes. That's a very good death. At that time, you go back home with the Godhead. Many of our devotees, by the way, devotees who were not even as long as, who were not even as long in Krishna consciousness as most of you here are, they had very glorious death, but they were arranged this death by Krishna. I remember there was this one person, his name was Matsya. Everyone in the Heidelberg temple did not like him. He had two left hands, he couldn't speak the language, and I do not know that sometimes devotees can be so impersonal, you know, and everyone thought of Matsya as useless, and he sometimes would sit near the window and just cry, no one likes me, and he also couldn't do anything. Washing pots, everything would fall down when he washed pots, and he was just a big body who had to always eat prasadam and sleep and so on. So then the next thing we heard is he felt so forlorn that he went to Vrindavan. Then the next thing we heard is that he was seen on Jamashtami at Radhakund. He had died there. Wonderful. This means Srimati Radharani comes at the time of death and says, my dear devotee, now come, Haribol. And then he goes out of the body. Glorious. Matsya with the two left hands. So devotees, sometimes look at the milas. What is milas? The mercy. Yeah. They get the milas. Hare Krishna. So let us not die in the West, Prabhu. Let us die in Krishna consciousness. When I first came to Krishna consciousness, I was very much impressed by death because some of my friends had died. We had very adventurous friends, and we did. I very much remember being very much impressed. This is the end, ooh, you know. I remember this very much, when I heard about Krishna conscious philosophy and I could understand parts of it, not all, parts, I thought, all right, I will live like I always used to live. That means in a material way. And at the time of death, I will just think of Krishna. I will go back to Krishna. No need to become a brahmachari. This is an exquisite torture, not meant for the rich people. I thought this, and for a long time I wouldn't take any serious steps in Krishna consciousness until one time the devotees informed me, no, you can't control your thoughts at the time of death. They will just run according to the impressions of your life. Samskaras. You don't just say to your mind at death, now think of this, please. You can make an experiment of this. You can start tomorrow when you're fresh to tell your mind what he should think. Only of Krishna, and, you know, and see what he does. You will see. He won't necessarily obey your pious command. Would you like to make an experiment tomorrow? It's free of cost. It's very telling. So at the time of death, there's no way to tell your mind what he should think. It will just think what it used to think throughout the life. And that, therefore, you have to start. Now, Lalita Nath. No, you're doing. I'm only saying your name because you are so kind to me. You have to start now. I mean, now means now. Therefore, what I wanted to do tomorrow evening, I want to invite all of you for a Vrindavan evening. Vrindavan evening is, we will tell some leelas of Krishna, which are very relevant for us, and we will see very nice slides about Krishna's land, Vrindavan, because in that land of Vrindavan, we can very easily remember Krishna, home, Krishna's home. So we will make the Vrindavan evening. Now, time has come where we need to end. Thank you very much for your kind attention to the subject. Please don't forget everything as you are moving out of the room. Think about it in your own terms and think about what conclusions or what, let me say, what thoughts you can crystal or take out of this subject. Don't forget, Prabhupada was saying or putting quite a big bit of emphasis on this by saying, philosophy means to keep death in front of your eyes. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sisi Go Nitai ki jai, Go Premanandi Arirgo.